From socialservice.sg, I am Jing Yao, co-hosting today's episode with Isaac. Today, we have a broad conversation on PE 2023 with veteran journalist Bertha Hansen. She reflects on Mr. Tharman Shanmugaratnam's landslide win, shares how she got involved in Mr. George Goh's campaign, and discusses and evaluates the office of the elected presidency in Singapore. In particular, we highlight two bodies, the Presidential Elections Committee, or the PEC, as well as the Council of Presidential Advisors, or the CPA. This episode was recorded on September 11, 2023.
So, actually wanted to speak with you during PE 2023, but you said then that you'd like to chat after the campaign period, which I think in retrospect is a really good idea, because although the campaign was, as you described, for G 2020, a damp squib, we had unexpected...
I described it.
You described G 2020 when you were on this podcast.
Oh, okay, right.
So I'm using the same expression, which I think is a fair characterization as well. It's a damp squib. Okay. We had some unexpected result in the landslide, right? Not that he won, but there was a landslide kind of victory. So, generic first question, what are we to kind of make of the results for Mr. Tharman?
I think what I've said, people have said before, there's something I want to make clear. I'm not so sure I have any terribly good or great or new insights. I think what was the key thing about him was his personal popularity, right? I mean, he doesn't come across as linked to the PAP.
Yeah.
So the stuff didn't stick to him, which is what people expected, especially his rivals. I mean, he's been quite a busy middle of the year for Parliament and for the PAP.
Yeah.
But it didn't seem to have touched him. I would say that if you look at the presidency conceptually, it actually would have been very logical not to have someone who was in the government and in the ruling party last month to suddenly go over the other side and say that I cannot screen you. So basically, that's something which I've been wondering about for some time. But it didn't matter. It didn't matter to the people when it came to Tharman, or it wasn't understood. So 70%, 70% is a big mandate. So in the GE, for example, when you have a big mandate, you can expect that the PAP will do something with it. I make big policy changes, some big splash somewhere, right? So, but I ask you this, what does it mean for the president to have a big mandate? Is it purely symbolic? Is it so that we can say, oh, he represents us? But what can you do with your big mandate? So that's something which I've always pondered, because the mandate is for only two things. One, to say that you can say no to the reserves and key public appointments. Actually, there's only one. You don't have to go and elect a president for other reasons. You elect for these two points. And then the other two is a bit secondary, like community role and your ceremonial role. So, I mean, I congratulate Mr. Tharman. It was even beyond what I expected. I PIP 50 would be good enough. But then it went 70. So it goes to show you that at the end of the day, people look at the person, not the party or where you come from is the most important thing.
Yeah, I guess one follow-up I had was there's been a lot of talk in the after the result. They said 70% shows that people are looking past race. We're finally ready for non-Chinese prime minister. Do you have any comments about that? Do you agree, disagree?
I think basically those people who say we're in a post-race world. I'm not so sure we're in a post-race world. Mm-hmm. I think we are just a people who look at other people on the basis of merit and what they have in them. So if you're black, white, or blue, it really doesn't matter. So long as we think you can do the job, you're good enough, right? So, I mean, if everybody is of the same caliber, maybe race will still prefigure. I don't know. But, but I think that is putting down the individual. So you could be black, white, or blue, and as an individual, you stand out. It doesn't matter what other colors you are up against. So this business about looking at race, to me, it shouldn't matter at all. You just look at the person. So it's not a question of whether race is absent or present. Is that person good enough? Is he better than the rest? Now, I think there'll be very few instances when you can say all of them are the same. In those instances, which are very few and just shows you can't make up your mind, then maybe race matters. So that's how I look at this whole race issue.
So taking us back before the presidential campaign started and everything, I think if you could share a bit about how you got involved with Mr. George Goh's team, you were part of his media team, what parts of his media duties, engagement were you responsible for? And how do you come on board at first, I guess?
Oh, okay. Well, it was my ex-boss, Han Fu Kwang, who drew me on board. He was an old friend of George. So he knew I was a bit of a loose end. Sometimes very free. Then so he said, do you want to come on board? And I thought, wow, no, it's something different. I mean, I'm usually on the other side, right? But now to go on this side, it's quite a new thing for me. So I thought it would be quite exciting. As for what I did, well, I don't do social media, although I'm very much on social media, but they had a very super team. And I suppose being on Facebook is very different from being on TikTok, on Instagram, and do YouTube videos, all of which are quite relatively new territory to me. So I don't do the social media operations. So my job is mainly for news media. So I prep him for interviews, I prep him for doorstops, I look at media strategy, what do we want to say now, what do we say tomorrow, next week, that kind of thing, what bullets to say for ourselves. I mean, I write speeches, I write press releases. So it's a whole gamut. As long as it has to do with getting out there, it's got to do with me.
One part of the campaign, and I guess it's a big reason why I'm so eager to talk to you, was because I thought one big part of the campaign, which I wish received more attention, was the publication, which is Lights on Istana, training a spotlight on the presidency. I mean, maybe by nature, because of the publication, you attract someone like me to read it, but it's fascinating. And maybe to get started, for listeners who may not be familiar with the publication, tell us what it was about and how it featured in Mr. Goh's kind of campaign.
Oh, it was an accident, I have to tell you. So basically, well, it just started because there was one point during the parliamentary hearings when the CPIB was mentioned and the role of the president as well. So I thought, well, good time, I'm a journalist, I hook onto the news. And then from the news, I expand, right, to the powers of the presidency. But some of my Facebook followers, my Facebook friends, started telling me, hey, can you do more or not? More of this or not? Can we do more of this? So I just basically on my own decided that I would just write it. So we start very basically with the different powers and all that. And I think it gained a bit of traction. I mean, some people thought it was a waste of time because this is something that is, well, not mass. It's not mass. It's only interested with people like Kwan and a few others. But I thought it was something to leave behind as well. Something that is solid, that you can refer to. So that was how it started. So, and then when I went on, I just got more and more energized, right? Yeah. Because people started writing and people saying, why don't you put in an e-book? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Well, okay, quite on. So I asked George and he was quite excited too because, you see, we came up with this concept of open book. It's one of his campaign slogans, you see. And here is a book which tries to tell you more about the presidency. So it sort of fit well. By accident, by the way, it's totally by accident. So, so that's what it's about. I decided to go on with it because it really annoyed me that even journalists don't know what the presidency is about. You know, I was really annoyed and I suppose I shouldn't be because we had walkovers, right?
Yeah.
So when you have a walkover, you don't look into the matter and all that. But, you know, when they start asking you questions like, hey, what is this deliberative threat? What does it mean? Are you sure? And I'm just tired of pointing people to the Constitution and saying this is what it means. So I said, okay, now I've got to get down and do something. And not just answer like an FAQ. What is the power? No, you see that everywhere, including mainstream media. I wanted something that has more depth. So it's like when it started, what was it like? Then what changes went over it, what people said. So there's some historical background and then the arguments, for example, experts who say this is the wrong way or this is the right way. So when you give something bigger, thicker, you can really chew on it. Yeah. So that's what it's about.
Yeah. And no, and it's, I agree with it, because only during the presidential election, the only forum they had, they spent the first 5 minutes with a set of PowerPoint slides trying to explain the role and responsibility. Yeah, yeah. You won't see that for G2020, right? Because that one was right straight into it. And then all the reports about 5 things you need to know about this, 6 things, 7 things. And so I think that,
No, it was quite idiotic, isn't it? I mean, imagine now, all of us are going to vote, And then we have like, about 2 weeks or maybe 9 days, add another week, to think all these 5 things you should know and then make a decision. I mean, crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, a lot of people made fun of the fact that Mr. Tan was fact-checked on live media. Yeah, sure. I think there is a bigger thing about that this has to be explained, right? That even though we've had since 2011, there was one, 2017, and but in between there was that commission also, the Menon report that came out as well, but it really didn't feature much and substantively in the discussions also, I think.
So basically what the president features as mainly is his ceremonial stuff, right?
Yeah.
So we see wave hand, shake hand, right? And then suddenly you are told every 7-6 years that you actually got to elect this fella though. And then this is why you have to elect. Now, are you supposed to elect on the basis of what he looks like next to some other head of state? I mean, is that what you have to go on? And then if no, you have to go elect him on these 2 other points, then what do you know about it? Nothing.
So I'm guessing, and you, I don't know if you mentioned this, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm guessing part of the publication's objective was to make a case for Mr. George Goh's eligibility, right? At that point in time as well, I was a bit sick and tired of people describing, oh, that's what's stated in the law itself, right? That's why you cannot. And then you have all these things about, oh, what if you have $500 million, $1 company, for instance, so forth, right? Yeah. So one thing that I think is lost in the discussion which featured in the report is the PEC or the Presidential Elections Committee, right? So based on the report and based on what you've done so far, how should Singaporeans think about the PEC? What is the PEC and why should they care about the PEC based on the report?
Okay, first of all, you guessed wrongly, about this part of making a case for its eligibility. I tried very hard to say that deliberative track is a deliberative track, which means that you can't just pin one figure and say yes or no. It is an argument that the candidate has to make to the PEC with all these figures to say, look, I am convinced I qualify. I hope you think so too. So that's something people don't get. We are so used to following instructions. Everything is an instruction. If you don't make it, you don't make it, no? So never mind. I did that for in a few different parts of the book, in fact. No, I did it generally on independence and private sector versus public sector, even PEC, I did that. Now, the PEC, they only come up when there is an election and when there is a contest. That's more important because you don't hear about it. So the last time you heard about PEC was 14 years ago.
Yep.
And I don't think many people knew that one of the PEC members was also on that PEC too. So what is the PEC? I would say this body of people trying to decide for the electorate who is electable.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, that is it. Okay. So there is some assumptions being made here, and it was made a long time ago, that we, the hoi polloi, the unwashed masses, we are unable to make some kind of decision. So the first cut has been done for us. No? There's a short list of people. So I'm amazed that not more people are asking questions about this.
Yeah.
Frankly, you have to check this. I don't remember any publication putting down all the names of the PC members. And I keep wondering why. So I basically put them into Lights of Istana, on Istana, all of them, who they are. So that has always been intriguing. If the media doesn't tell people, then who is going to tell people? So you need to know who they are. More importantly, you need to know how they were picked. Who picked them, right? What sort of background do they bring to this assessment of candidates? So this is like the wise trying to pick their fellow wise men kind of thing. But we have to start, first of all, the basis of knowing that these people are wise. The PEC is a group of wise people. So I don't know why people are not asking more questions of them. Because to tell you the truth, I've always wondered, about the PEC. For one thing, they've raised the numbers since the 2017 Constitutional Commission. One of them, according to the commission, is supposed to be a private sector person picked by the Prime Minister. Yeah. This private sector person happens to be Justice Quentin Low. And he was a former partner, yeah. But hello, a legal firm is quite different, huh?
Yeah.
And I wondered about that. And even Mr. Chua Tien Po, he is a very well-known grassroots leader. And I think he received a PBM sometime ago too. So nobody is asking questions of them, first of all. But then they are immediately given this sheen of immunity. You can't ask them why they did this or why they did that. So there's this vague, opaque, Merlin figure up there. And then they just, whatever won, and this is it and this is not. So it is something that I find very disheartening when citizens don't question.
Yeah.
Citizens don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, go ahead.
The other thing is that the other interesting point that came out of this PE is this whole business about issuing your character certificate. Mm-hmm. I've always made it clear in journeys, it's not just one cert, no, two. The other one is character integrity and honesty or whatever, right? And nobody has even asked them how they do that part. Is it just a question of making sure you got no criminal record? Yeah. I don't need you to do that. I just ask the police or whoever, or law ministry or home, and you just tell me how many car park fines you haven't paid or whatever. So the whole idea that you have this body, which is not just assessing your ability, but assessing your character, and you don't know how they do that, is to me inconceivable. I mean, if you want to base on integrity, honesty, et cetera, then Tan Kin Lian should not be there.
Correct.
There's enough public evidence, and you can't tell me I don't know about the public evidence. And what kind of investigating committee are you? So it's all very confusing, very messy. This whole election process is so full of holes. And the PEC is a very big hole.
Yeah, and I was going to say the issue with Mr. Tan only came up because AWARE came up too. I mean, it only gained traction because they were one of the first few to publicly make a stand against what it was
posting
on social media. Because if not for that, it might have come up, but not in such a public, extensive manner that warranted him to defend or his family, his daughter to come out and say something about it.
Yes. Yeah, I know. So that's the funny thing about it. The PEC was supposed to issue this character to stop all these things. They said, I have decided that you are off character. So this whole thing about having a dignified, gentlemanly contest, that's why they say you must also do this. Yeah. And the other reason I remember that was given was that these candidates don't come from political parties. So political parties don't screen them, right? So somebody must screen them on this basis. So, I don't quite take it that way because I think the public can do the screening quite well, no? Especially in terms of character, we are quite able to do so. So I don't know whether we should place this burden on the PEC or this, not burden, responsibility on PEC. That surely is something that the public can assess rather than a group of people who don't look at social media or whatever. Anyway, it's a damn short time. From the time you start the PEC to the day they finalize the thing and call it, it's just a few days.
Yeah.
So you really wonder whether a few days is enough time for them to look at things as well.
Along this line of group of people, right? This didn't come up as much as in the report, but it came up in parts, but not as a chapter, is the CPA, which is the Council of Presidential Advisors. Right? We had a chat before this briefly, you said this would have been something you would dive into deeper had Mr. Goh been deemed eligible by the PEC itself. But in a similar vein as well, help us understand what the CPA is, right? Because it's another body that gets alluded to, it's the Merlins, but doesn't quite talk about enough as well. So what's the CPA and how do we make sense of the CPA?
I covered the Constitutional Commission hearing today. And to me, that was the most significant point. What the CPA is, the powers that have now been enhanced, even more so than the Reserve Presidency, even more so. But then people just wanted to know about the Reserve Presidency because it's more primeval. It's, yeah. So, but the thing is, when it comes to the CPA, this is really a group of people, right, who actually have almost as much power as the president, and they're not elected. You know, the whole CPA was conceived like a sort of check and balance until check and balance equals it is. And you don't know who they are. I ask you flat out, for example, if I ask you in the CPA, who are the president's representatives? Who are the PM's representatives? Can you tell me? No. You have to go and dig. It's there somewhere. But, yeah. You know, do you really expect the normal, ordinary Singaporean going dig? No. In fact, they say dig for what? Huh? So you don't know. You don't know the composition. You don't know who. You don't know how they put in. It's a very complicated process with alternate members now, all coming in and all sorts of things. And not just that, it's a process in which they have to be consulted. Have to be. The president must consult them. It didn't used to be a must, no? So you tell somebody with a 70% mandate, hello, you have to consult me, ho. That is really weird, no? I mean, okay, so, but then it's constitutional. Now, if I have a 70% mandate, I say, hey, hello, I got 70% of the people behind me and you who are. Then you say, I am part of the constitutional structure. So it's so messy. Yeah. And then, of course, there's this whole complicated voting process, right? How many members say yes, then you do what, then you do what, then you do what. And at the end of the day, your veto is really quite void. Nah? And it only matters to you if you take it to the hilt. No, if you take it to the hilt, you go to parliament, not even the people, go to parliament for the prime minister to say, my parliament agrees with me.
Yeah.
And by which time, I don't know, man. I think really what's happened to this country by then, where you have to go to that point? So the CPA is so important and nobody cares. That's why I've always wanted to know who they would appoint as their own CPA members. Yeah. Suddenly you have the same old people, you check back at the list of CPA fellows from, 1993. Yeah. You can probably see who, I don't know whether they're repeat people.
Yeah. And I also had that I was chatting with someone as well, at least in parliament, proceedings are enhanced, right? So you can go and see.
Yes,
if you try to understand, are there like meeting minutes and all these things that go on, it's private. The website is quite clear that the information is not there, right? Unless you are a civil servant, then you can request for meetings. But otherwise, you don't know what goes on. It's a black box.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that ties into what you just said in terms of the opacity of it. Like you don't really know what's going on.
I think the opacity is what is detrimental to the office of the president. So we don't know what we are actually electing, who and for what purpose, right? And I think if you see this whole election, how many times we've had to hear mainstream media say things like, only upon advice of the government. Speak only on, my God, we are going to vote for someone who can only say this much or not at all.
Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, for example, one of the things that George wanted to do was to make some of the work public. Very little, lah. We're not even sure whether we'll be allowed to. So just say how many times you've done this or who you've screened and all that. You look at the whole process of key appointments. Nothing has been said about it. You don't even know how many people the president has screened. Even that also you don't know. So if the president doesn't have to unlock the reserves, it'll be a very uneventful presidency. And then basically all you do is watch the ceremonial stuff and maybe some of the community stuff.
Yeah.
And the constitution is so tight, or at least that's how the government interprets it, that you can't say anything that amounts to some kind of lobbying or some kind of comment on legislation. Now, So in effect, the president is gagged. And I think there are some things which are probably within his constitutional rights to say or talk about, which he should say because he's president. For example, the key appointments part is a question of preserving the integrity of the civil service. That is the main, the substance is I protect the civil service, right? From interference, gada-gada. So tell me, don't you think that in such instances, when something like the black and white bungalows come up, that's something the president can make a point about, whether or not how to preserve the integrity of the civil service, what the president thinks politicians can or should do. So basically, I would think that's within his remit. The other thing is corruption. Do you remember when the Prime Minister says the CPIB needs to get my concurrence? Right? And there were a lot of questions, right? You mean to say the CPIB needs to get your concurrence, but then you need to get their permission to tell us that the minister has been arrested. So that's all pretty weird, isn't it? So it's very hazy. So I think this is where, on such matters, when it concerns the civil service and incorruptibility of our governing system, the president should come out and be the anchor and say, this is what I think as president I would like to see. Now, if you tell me this is lobbying or legislation, I think not. I think it's a question of giving us some moral anchors, some ethical points that we can agree on as a country. And because you have 70% mandate, I will listen to you. So this gagging business is, to me, not good. Although I would say that Halima, in the later half of her presidency, did contravene. She did contravene, basically, by calling for caning for above 50s. That's a contravention. You're making a proposal and you are in the office of president. You cannot say, this is my personal view. In this whole presidential election, it's been crazy. How is this my personal view? Hello? Is that not that easy for people to say, okay, that's only his personal view? His office, his party, his government, all doesn't matter. It's too hard. It's unbelievable. You might be sticking to the letter, but you know that's not the spirit of whatever is intended.
So I have two questions, I think, following up on that. The first would be, across the president's duties, the constitutional, ceremonial, community duties, what changes would you make to them, if any? And a second one is, you pointed out holes in the election process, what the president can or cannot do, they are gagged and so on. And also some people, some commentators have said,
unifier, but they
have to go through an election to get a mandate. So this opens it up to politicization, I'm sure you've seen in the process and so on. So I guess then the second question would be, do you think it should remain as an elected presidency, or do you think we should go back to appoint the president, they just do their ceremonial duties and so on?
I think before I answer that, I have to explain why I was in the Josh Goh team. You know, because if I think the whole thing is total wreck, then what am I doing inside it? I think it would have been a bit doable in a sense if somebody from the outside went in and looked at the system and is able to say, why is this being done this way? Can we do it another way? Or are you sure this is the right person? No, and you don't know the person at all and you don't know what has been done before. Sometimes a clean slate is a good slate, to start on rather than a status quo that, don't worry, I've been doing this all the time. I know how to do it. Hello, if you've been doing all the time, you know how to do it, then what new change can you bring? What new insights can you bring? So I saw it as an outsider coming in to basically look at things that people outside the establishment cannot see. And basically you're there trying to see, okay, this is what's happening in that black box. What somebody is there in that black box. Because we have to admit, this is a very PAP-dominated country. Basically, they're everywhere, right? Whether it's the grassroots, the unions, the GLCs, agencies, right? And now even the presidency. I think one slot can give way, whatever, so that some outsider can go and take a look and be very clear to other people that, hello, I don't know these people. I don't owe them anything. I have no reason to think about their feelings or whatever favors. So that was the reason I came. I said, good, let's try this. It's a new thing. It will be new for Singapore. Let's see if it can work. And yet the position is not so radical that you can upset anything. Because there are the constitutional constraints, right? So you can't GE, you change government. Wow, that's a big deal, right? But this is something that is very contained. Within parameters. So I said, why not? Let's see if somebody can bring a different point of view into the system. So that's why I went in. But now you ask me, I will say this. I think it is very difficult for a non-estate person to get in the first place. Yeah. So in the first place, if it's going to be so hard and it's going to be mainly a choice of different establishment types, then I don't see a reason for any kind of election. If it's a question of we want to maintain the status quo, we want to have a good working relationship with the government, we just want to carry on business as usual. If that is the case, then I don't know why we have an expensive election process. So given the criteria is already like that, I'm not expecting to see any new or different type of figure. And not just the criteria. The whole process of election is not in favor of somebody who is not a public figure in the first place or not very well known. You have 9 days of campaigning. You know, so you tell me how is a person supposed to do that? Yeah. I mean, Tan Kin Lien and was it Ng Kok Song also complained, right? So little time to do so many things. I mean, George planned it way ahead. In fact, he planned it too well. I mean, we left with thousands of tissue paper and some banners and t-shirts, you see. So if you want to do that, you have to plan. But it's not as simple as some people say. Today, just go and print now. You go and try. You go and print your poster. Then who you got to put it up? Who you got to put it on the wooden? That sort of thing. And look, there are plenty of logistical details that people don't know about. So the whole campaign process itself is so tough. And then they tell you they don't encourage really. They might as well just say ban lah. I mean, basically, we were looking for sites for that. And it was quite difficult. And you needed months. And it's indoor. Then you got to pay. It takes money. And just kept printing campaign posters itself is 200,000 is that much money. So if it's so stacked against somebody who is not, doesn't already have a machinery, hasn't already done this, and might as well turn it back lah. Have an appointed president. So I would, and since I cannot see what the president does, he can't say very much, then why am I going through this process of electing someone? I don't know what I'm electing. So yes, I think the Constitutional Commission was right. It might be better to go back to an appointed presidency. And if you really are worried about this, the reserves and all that, you can go and have another body. After all, please remember, your CPA itself is not an elected body. Your PEC itself is not an elected body. There's only one person who's elected and he has been basically so many factors on him. So what's the point? Yeah.
Everything that's been said and done, the dust has settled. In a few days, as of this recording, Mr. Farman will be officially the president of our country. So what do you expect in the next 5 years from Mr. Farman in his new role?
Well, I think, I don't know, you see. The trouble is, his presidency is something which I would imagine would be a continuation of the status quo. Yeah. He'll be abroad a lot, but then he's always been abroad a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And basically, what else can he bring to it? He doesn't really have anything concrete beyond things like he will be a unifier. These are all very abstract terms. Even respect for all. I have a great deal of problem with respect for all, even though people are praising for it. I just wonder how you can talk about this when you come from such a combative party.
Oh yeah,
And a government which is so confrontational. And he's very lucky, right, not to be in parliament at the point of time when all these things were being discussed.
Yep.
Or he asked, what independent point of view did you espouse to cabinet that you can espouse now? What's the difference? What is the difference you in cabinet and you outside when it comes to having an independent mindset?
Yeah.
So do you think this will give you more room to be independent? Less room to be independent? What? Or you just there as someone said, security guard, just to jaga. You cannot be a man of your intellect, your stature. Surely, you cannot tell me that this is the role you are going for.
Yeah.
It can't be. And then you can't talk, right? How many times are you going to go out to say, we should rise above whatever, we should be doing this, should be doing that, without you looking as though you are trampling on the toes of the 4G government, your juniors. So basically, in this case, it's not just a question of who's senior, who's junior, very evidently, you are the more senior person and you are talking to a junior person.
Mm-hmm.
So all these factors come into play when I see a Taman presidency. Or what I can, what I think I can expect is it'll be business as usual. And I hope he makes more of the president than it has been. I mean, I look at Halimah Yacob. I think this whole presidential election, she's got the wrong end of the stick, because then comparisons start to be made, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So she walked in, she's a speaker, right? Only 3 years, No expertise behind her and all that she got. So, and then open reserves 5 times. Tell me, you can unlock reserves so many times. Why really need a Taman or an Kopsong to do that? I mean, what I'd rather know is your CPA, are they okay? That will be the more important point. So it's a bit of a shambles. I think the whole presidential system is a bit of a shambles. So maybe Taman can make more of it, solidify the role a bit. But I doubt. I don't think he was put up to be another Ong Teng Cheong, whatever it is that he wants to believe. In fact, the question I would have asked him if I ever met him during the campaign run is, I remember that you were MD of MAS in the last year of Ong Teng Cheong's tenure. And he was really going on and on about how civil servants hated him. Do you want to give him this and that? Were you one of them? or are you going to say, I know what sort of grief not to give to the president? I don't know. So too many questions were unanswered. Which sometimes makes me think I should be on the other side. Then I can do the asking.